You are about to enter the pop, pulp, and subcultural minds of several individuals. What may leak into the ether can sometimes be too strange, too confusing for the average human mind. When nerds assemble.
Hello, and welcome to episode 8 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
And we've got a nice sort of selection for you this week up for discussion. I want to go straight in with further questions over whether or not Resident Evil 6 will be a horror game, considering that the demo went on general release the other week.
Well, first of all, I'll probably opt out of this bit because even though I've really enjoyed what I played of Resident Evil 4, when it came to Resident Evil 5, I really tried liking the demo, could not get on with it. Really tried playing the full game when a friend bought it, so you could play it split screen. Really couldn't get on with it, so I'm out.
I have to say, I've never really been a big Resident Evil fan, to be honest. I just don't get the whole... I don't like the control system. It annoyed the hell out of me.
No.
What was that? Mostly the originals that did that, or was it the newer ones?
The newer ones where you couldn't run and shoot at the same time.
Ah, but you can run and shoot in this one.
That's the big.
I think probably the main sort of revolution to happen in the game design.
Yeah, I think the collection of fans just went, yes.
Or the purists are against it. I mean, who knows?
Actual gamers going, yes! Actual purists of the series are going, no!
Always the way, though, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, I've been hearing different things about the demo, and I have to say, I've been trying to stay away from the demo because I've decided already that I want to buy the game, mostly because of the co-op, because Paul and I are always desperate for co-op games anyway, and we managed to get through Resident Evil 5 pretty well.
We're currently actually playing through the original Borderlands together, and we're actually really enjoying it.
Which means, though, that might mean that by the time that Resident Evil 6 comes out, we may in fact actually be buying Borderlands 2, and then be playing all that, and then maybe eventually get around to buying Resident Evil 6. Something like that. But I know a lot of people seem to be put off by the demo that they've recently released.
There again, I don't think demos... Sometimes demos can be a good thing. At other points, it can actually... kind of bias you against it, you know, because if you don't like the demo, obviously, you're not going to plonk down the 40 quid to actually buy the full game. But the demos, they're not always, in terms of quality... they're not always representative of the final kind of finished game.
No, they're not. They give you a taster, don't they?
Yeah.
And what they've got to try and do, like a movie trailer, is drag you in within that 5 minutes and hook you. And if they can't do that on a demo, then people are just going to go, I'm not going to bother with that because it looks absolutely, you know, I didn't enjoy playing that 5 minutes. But then a lot of games, you actually get through the first 5 minutes, realise that that's just the build-up of the actual whole thing. And then the next sort of 2-3 hours are actually really immense fun.
I remember what they did with the demo for Resident Evil 2 on the PlayStation, which was actually have it so that you can kind of you have a time limit, so it's like you can play the first 20 minutes through the game, like get as far through the game as you can within 20 minutes before the demo ended.
No, that's fine, because it gives you the sort of, you know, the playing area, and you can play about with it. You can experiment, but it's still limited. It's not just You get to play for a few minutes and that's your lot.
Yeah, it also means that the demo has replayability with how far you can actually get within that 20 minutes.
Yeah.
It's quite good.
The art of doing a good demo is something which only a few devs have managed to
actually get...
really get right.
I mean, I think some of the best demos are the demos that give you a real look at what's changed. Something like sports titles like FIFA. Because they allow you to play a whole sort of game, one game. But that's sort of, exactly. But it does work for demos because you get to see what the differences are in that game. Whereas a lot of demos which are highly have got really good storylines built into it and sort of build up to that crescendo. Whatever they're going to do, they've got to be able to tease you enough to get you to fork the money out. And in the sort of, even in 20 minutes, it can be limited at times.
Yeah.
You know, the style of the pace of the game.
Yeah, you know what the best demo of the last few years has been? Pretty much second to none.
Go on.
BioShock.
Oh.
Yeah.
So I never got to play the demo for that.
With the BioShock demo, it goes so far in the game, but they compress several of the events, like getting plasmids and yes. things like that. So you get a lot of the set pieces from the start of the game, like the plane crash, injecting, you know, for the first time, you know, all that kind of thing. So it really gives you a compressed taster. And that was one of the last games where it was, I grabbed the demo, played it, and I am going to love this game. This is, you know, this is the game for me.
Yeah.
And it really needs more developers to put a bit more, you know, thought into, you know, doing that kind of thing.
Definitely.
Mm. I think I want to move on to the next. For one of us, this appears to be particularly big news. Could the Paul, who it is big news for, please pronounce the title of said item correctly, for I don't believe I can.
Are we talking about Manimal?
There we go.
How can you not be able to say Manimal?
I get a bit Manimal. Confused when things together like that.
It's a Manimal.
Sony have got big plans for a franchise that hasn't seen the light of day since what, the 80s?
Yes, it was in the 80s.
Early 80s.
I believe it actually got cancelled after episode 8 because it was that good.
I see what you did there. That's not what I heard.
From what I remember hearing, it was one of those series where the ratings for it in America were so bad that they didn't even finish showing the episodes they had.
They didn't, which is a shame because I actually really enjoyed it.
I really enjoyed it at the time as well, but then I was 8, so...
Oh, yeah, this is the truth. I mean, it was quite cool. You had a guy who was a doctor, some sort of, in fact, I think he's been in Casualty or something since.
He was very British.
He was very, very British, and he had the power to turn into any animal he chose. However, with that and the sort of money that the studio threw at it, that meant he would normally change into either a hawk or panther, so they could actually use the CGI transformation effects from in every single episode from the original pilot.
It was excellent.
It was awesome. It was good fun, actually. It was a good storyline. It had good premise. If it had the money behind it and the actual script writing behind it that it deserved, it would have been all right.
if it had been better, it would have been good. Is what you're trying to say.
I have fond memories of watching that with my mum and dad at night while we were sort of, you know, just after tea, sitting down and watching it. It was either that or Dallas, so, you know, I was quite happy.
Okay,
with that.
Fine, yes. Given that choice, Manimal.
I'm slightly alarmed by the fact that it seems that Sony might try to make it more like Spider-Man. I'm not entirely sure how that's going to work, really. It sounds to me a bit like trying to update Dr. Dolittle and how not so well that went with Eddie Murphy. I crime fighter turns into animals.
It's like the organic version of Transformers.
No, it was actually more like a Brave Star but on Earth.
Englishman in disguise.
You know, but I think it could be quite interesting. It could be quite nice and it could be quite novel. And it's certainly, put it this way, it's certainly an IP that they can't really screw up much because it was pretty shocking to begin with. So if they can't improve that, God help us, Sony.
Fair enough. That's very true.
Yeah, it's one thing to take a already successful franchise and reboot it. To actually do it with a bad one, it's either going to be, well, it wasn't going to work anyway, or it's going to be, ha-ha, this is how you do it.
Yeah, it's either going to be, ha-ha, this is going to be how you do it, or it's going to be shown here on Sci-Fi. Simple as that.
Oh, dear.
know.
Yeah, that's one way of putting it. It could do so, but it could be so terrible that UK Sci-Fi Channel could show it.
Oh.
Blimey.
Oh. Yeah,
I will have to watch it just the once to see what it's like. In fact, I think it was repeating on Bravo. Is Bravo still there? I think the original series was on Bravo a couple of months ago.
I think somebody has dared to release it on DVD, but I do not know in which territory.
Really? Oh, right. Okay, I might have to have a look at that later.
Released on DVD? My first question is why?
Well, if they didn't show all the episodes... Sorry about that.
Can you tell I'm not a fan?
It was good cheese. It was very good cheese. Quality American trashy TV.
Like I said, I saw it when it was on TV at the time, and it was on, I think it was ITV.
BBC Two, I think, wasn't it?
And now you see, I think I get the feeling it might have been ITV to start off with, because it was just they got a lot of things like Automan and series like that. I remember being on TV, and it was mostly ITV which had them, so it could well have been repeated.
Did you remember any adverts? Because that'll say.
No,
I don't remember adverts in it. But then, I don't know. I was 8.
Good point.
Okay. I'm still... It's not like it's a done deal yet as to whether or not the whole thing will definitely, definitely, definitely go through. It could end up in development hell for Reno for several years.
And a lot of series go that way, don't they? Yes, they've been picked up. And that's the last hero of them.
Yeah. Which is fair
enough. I think the news that at least people in the UK should be rejoicing about this week, though, is the fact that Loading has currently got a crowdfunding project to bring its brand of gaming bar to London. For those of you who don't know, Loading is a games cafe and bar based in Falmouth, Cornwall. It tends to be visited by a lot of uni students, plus Paul and myself. And basically, the owner, James, basically wants to try and set up a much bigger scale version of it somewhere in London. And this crowdfunding project, which we'll give you a link to on the article, the episode post, is to basically just kind of upscale it and transport it there, because there's not much point in doing a bigger version in Cornwall, but in somewhere like London.
Well, to be honest, if they were going to change location, so move from where they are to a bigger, outlet, then yeah, that's understandable. But to actually do another one in Cornwall might be a bit.
Yeah, well, there's just no point in doing another one in Cornwall, but certainly transporting the whole experience to London and making it bigger and hopefully better is great. I've already put in for it, and I can't remember which one particular package it was that I went for, other than the fact that there's a hoodie involved, a branded hoodie. So,
You've obviously probably never been into Loading, but it is a really quite a good place, really. I know it sounds kind of stupid, but they have like free games there, so you can go on the Xbox 360 or PS3. Well, they don't have PS3 there at the moment, but they have also a couple of older consoles like the SNES and whatnot. They have a arcade cabinet as well. And they have, obviously, free Wi-Fi and drinks. So lots of nice game-related cocktails, for example, or shooters.
So, Cookie and Retro, would you go to a bar like Loading if it was just a tad closer? Because I think anywhere's closer than Cornwall at this point.
Yeah, no, definitely. If I was in London and it was there, that'd be great. Definitely go there. It'd be nice if they brought it up sort of up north a little bit further.
So like to Carlisle.
Yeah, I'll meet you in Carlisle for a coffee. Not a problem at all. Yeah, that sounds cool.
It would be rather... I mean, it's the kind of thing... It sounds like the kind of thing that I would do if I win the lottery.
Yeah,
you know, the sort of absolute prep project where, see, I like you know, sitting around with friends and playing you know, multiplayer games or just chatting and, you know, having a bit of a, you know, a tinker about with the latest thing.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you want a games bar, you know, something like that where you could, you know, sit around with friends, you could have a bit of a, you know, bash on Halo or, you know, whatever, a few games of that, and then a few games of something else. Yeah,
definitely.
Why on earth wouldn't you, especially with, you know, free internet and drinks?
It'd be awesome.
Admittedly,
that's,
the only...
That's just free internet, not free drinks. Free drinks would be ideal, but...
See, you've just destroyed my...
Admittedly, the only problem with the system is when somebody comes in and hogs the system on something like Skyrim, like a one-player game that he like spends the entire day on. In which case, it's kind of, you know, kind of have to yank him off the console.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose that would be annoying, but no, I think it'd be pretty cool, to be fair.
Well, actually, the James does have a very effective system for making sure that people don't stay on the console too long without buying drinks. He makes sure he has the family timer lock on, on like the Xbox 360. So that's a very effective method for getting people to buy drinks, because they're like, oh, okay, we have the code to continue playing. And Jimmy's like, are you going to buy more drinks? Okay. Right. Moving on from loading, which again, we will be giving people links to. Greg Ricker, who's done some quite pro-female series in the past and has done a lot of stuff with DC and Marvel, has come up and saying that he's not particularly pleased with DC's New 52 or Marvel's Marvel Now initiative, and that he's been becoming slightly perturbed with the Hollywoodization of the two big publishers in terms of how they treat their creative forces, like the writers and the artists. Has anyone else seen the quotes that have appeared online from an interview you did with Clint?
I've had a quick read through him. I mean, you know, he's got a fair few points. It's, you know, they are, you know, especially with Marvel, they are sort of turning it more into sort of, they are making it more attractive to people who see it, to the movies and stuff. But I suppose business sense dictates that now they've captured a whole new audience, they want to carry on with that audience. So you would find some of the comics possibly being changed a little bit to fit into that a little bit more. You know?
It's unfortunately, it's just inevitable, isn't it? Because the movies are getting, you know, so many people going to see them and stumping up cash.
Exactly.
Whether it's in the cinema or on TV and they're buying the tie-ins, it's unfortunate that a company like Marvel and DC, they're becoming more or less just tie-ins to the properties that they created.
Yeah, they're becoming more of a like a franchise, aren't they?
Exactly. Yeah, they're basically an IP engine.
Yeah.
For the money-making machine, which is going to be the movies and to a limited extent the games.
Well, yeah, it's Disney and is it Warner Brothers? Warner Brothers, isn't it now?
Yeah.
You know, so with Disney, I said as soon as I heard that Disney had got Marvel, I'll be honest, I just had visions of Mickey Mouse taking on Wolverine and stuff, you know, just to try and bring the audience across, and it was, no, but
I got
the
a
movies
bit,
they've done have been pretty good. I've got to give them that. They've really brought the whole like Avengers cycle in nicely and, you know, built it all around that. So
the one thing that I quite liked when it came to the Disney buying Marvel, which is basically there's obviously a game series called Kingdom Hearts, which usually kind of does a crossover between Square Enix and Disney. But the concept of, you know, kind of Marvel characters appearing in that does sound quite appealing. If they could kind of do it without, you know, kind of doing the whole... Well, so I mean, in terms of kind of market, Kingdom Hearts is fairly kind of... Not necessarily lowbrow, but it's fairly family-friendly.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, obviously Marvel...
Well, these days, their characters aren't exactly family-friendly.
Yeah.
Neither are the storylines.
But that is one of the good things I've liked about it, though, is that they have not tried to make it family friendly. They knew what the audience was there, and they have sort of broadened the scope to try and grab more punters.
But which then,
what any business is going to do.
But then at the same time, I'm looking at Greg Ricker's comments from his Clint interview, and he's basically, the fans are perhaps potentially getting a lot of material. It's the creative teams behind that material that aren't necessarily being treated at their best. And in some cases, the franchises aren't even being treated at their best. I've got a bit here that I've managed to highlight that I think I'd like to read a second, which is, despite what the publishers say, their interest in the talent is minimal now. The interest is only in promoting the financial worth of their properties. That was not the case as of 2 or 3 years ago when there was an exclusives war. But that's all gone by the wayside now. Ultimately, they are saying, we don't need you, because they can get a million more just like you. For every person who passes on the opportunity to write Spider-Man or Superman, I guarantee there are 5,000 hungry writers who would give their eye teeth to do it. But just because they want to do it, it doesn't mean they're capable of doing it. It comes down entirely to Warner Brothers realizing what they owned but had not exploited. At the end of the Harry Potter franchise, they went, oh crap, we need something else fast, looked over at Marvel's very successful film program. So, if...
You know, it's I can see where they're coming from, and yeah, it is a big problem. But I think, if anything, as the popularity grows, more people are going to be inclined to work within that industry because it's something they love and it's something they want to do. Video gaming is the perfect example where 15 years ago, you know, there wasn't a great choice of computer video games on the shelves. And you had stuff like Sega Power, was it? Sega Power, yeah. And, you know, you had your own dedicated magazines and everything else now. And, you know, because the popularity is growing and because the internet's here and it's all gone online, so to speak, you know, you are going to find it just the amount of people going for that industry is just going to increase.
Although by the same token, from my perspective, with the New 52 and Marvel Now initiative, it's kind of looking at it from the other perspective, you know, with these characters that have like lengthy histories that you know span 20, 30, even much longer than that years than that. Mm. You're obviously going to have people kind of slowly kind of going away from those old comics and whatnot.
Yeah.
And not necessarily any fresh blood in because the legacies are too long and too kind of distant to actually really kind of get sorted. So they've had to reboot it in a way in order to actually keep the franchises alive.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's difficult to say, really, isn't it? Because, I mean, it's just a natural... For me, it is just an... I can see what he's saying, and it is annoying for the creative studios and the creative talent behind it to feel like that. But we are getting to such a... It is today's society now where, unfortunately, you are generally just a number in a big machine that's sort of creating all this stuff. And it's, you know, you're not really... From experience, you're not really... what's the word? In today's society, you are just a number. It's a numbers game now, and it's a bit depressing about that sort of side of things, but it is the way things are going at the moment.
It's also very cyclical in the comics industry, because this is what the kind of situation which brought around a lot of the creators leaving and forming Image.
Yes. Mm. And Dark Horse, wasn't it, as well? Is that enough?
I think Dark Horse was... more of a just an independent, because I was reading a lot of Dark Horse things at the time, and they were building themselves up by doing a lot of film licensing, like Aliens and Terminator, things like that. But yeah, it was the whole fuss of it was the properties which were the important thing, not the creators, which caused Rob Liefeld, who I happen to think is a hack and vastly overrated in pretty much every single respect. But it's the people he took with him to set up Marvel. Not Marvel. Image and a few of the offshoot companies like TopCap.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Malibu was a small one as well, wasn't it? I can't remember if that was an offshoot.
Yeah.
But that got bought up. I remember that.
Once again,
the whole problem with the properties being what's important now, and Marvel and DC just wanting to kick books out, get people reading. The problem with all that now, the problem with doing it now, is that video games and the internet.
Yeah.
There's a lot more competition, and speaking personally, I absolutely hate the idea of digital comics. I do not like that at all.
Can I just say that, going from the other perspective once again, I'd actually feel that I've done my job if my IP was actually more successful, more well-known than I, the artist, was. I mean, obviously you can take it to extremes where it's like, Sherlock Holmes, and, they can't do anything after that because it'll always be known for it. But in the end, that's the testament to his work, I would have thought.
I see exactly where you're coming from, but unfortunately I think comics have got far too much of a legacy of it's the IP which is the seller. There are very few people, there are very few artists and writers, Frank Miller maybe being an exception there.
Jack Kirby as well.
Yeah. But even so, if they created a comic and it was in the superhero in a genre, I think you're almost certain to be coming from the perspective of it's the IP which is the star, being backed up possibly by a star set of artists and writers.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the problem. If it was music, it's the creators who are the selling point. It doesn't matter who's releasing it.
No, it's the actual artist, isn't it, behind it?
Yeah, same with authors.
Same with movies to a certain extent as well.
Definitely. But I mean, even with music, some people who, like, you'll have, people associate, well, with, for instance, Kylie Minogue, you've got hits like Spinning Round and stuff like that, but they're actually written by other people that you never really hear about.
Yeah.
So you've still got the same sort of, it is a brand in some cases, rather than the creator.
When it comes to pop music, you're almost seeing a cross between IP and performer. That's what you're selling.
Exactly.
You're not necessarily selling the fact that they're a singer-songwriter.
No, it's the brand again, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, that sounds like a Kylie song.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to get at before. I wasn't having a digs at everybody or anything, but it is the way. It is literally brands. It's like Pepsi and Cola. It's there. That's one of the reasons I still say Call of Duty is still phenomenally successful. It's because they've created a little bit of an IP, but it's actually the brand side of it that they've pushed more than anything, and it's the brand that's associated with it now.
The dead didn't go too far.
Moving from one slightly comic book themed conversation to another, we've got our big discussion for this week, which is Avengers Gate. For those who don't know, the UK kind of got fudged over the, I know it's definitely the Blu-ray version. I'm not sure if this applies to the DVD as well.
I think it does.
But okay, probably then to the Blu-ray as well. But
I think there'd be even more anger if the the DVD release had these.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so basically, there's a spear tip missing in a death scene, and then we ended up with like no commentaries or anything on ours. Basically, Disney have kind of been pussyfooting around the thing, and then eventually came up with the solution that if people wanted A, the full death scene, and B, obviously the commentaries, that they should just import the US version of the Blu-ray because it'll be region free anyway. I'm not particularly impressed with this.
We're terribly sorry that you're foreign.
And, it was the thing about the spear tip, I think, that annoyed me, because they were basically saying, oh, you know, we couldn't quite get it past, like, the censors or something, because you're difficult. She's like, no, the spear tip was okayed when the BBFC rated the film for cinematic release earlier this year. There is no excuse.
No, there isn't. I mean, it's when DVDs first came out, I must admit, I actually got a multi-region DVD player, and I actually spent most of my time importing DVDs from the US version of play.com.
Okay. Yeah.
Purely because A, I'd get them quicker for some, well, because they were released in America quicker, and B, a lot of the time the features were different and there was bits that were cut from the UK versions. Typical example, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, they actually, for the UK version, for some reason, deleted the word bugger from Little John quite a bit.
So there was no buggering?
Yeah, there was no buggering about in that film, no. Christian Slater, you know, used the F word. Oh, no! And they actually overdubbed the UK one when it was released. They overdubbed it, and really badly as well, which was just shocking. Well,
it's always funny when they overdub stuff, like in terms of lines of dialogue, as though people won't actually notice that, you know, the lips don't actually match up with what they're saying.
I think the censors are a bunch of melon farmers.
They are. I mean, it's stuff like even Braveheart was cut in the UK.
What?
Yeah. Now, there are two things, while I remember that, I'll interject on here. Now, one... a possible explanation why DVDs were crappy in the UK to start off with. I remember this at the time. The initial DVD manufacturing plants in Europe could only do single layer discs.
Ah.
Yeah.
That's why, if you pick up early DVDs, some of them are double-sided.
Yes. Oh, I remember that. Yes.
Yeah.
Used to call it... Was it flicking the disc or something daft? Yeah.
Yeah. So you'd have the situation that when a film would come out in the UK or in Europe, seeing as, you know, mostly, I've got a lot of DVDs that also have French cinema ratings on as well. But they'd have the situation where they'd have to fit the film, the menus, and any alternate, audio tracks into 4.5 gig.
Blimey.
So yeah. Any extra features or anything like that would get chopped off just so it could fit. And sometimes they did reduce the bitrate quality of the film as well.
Did.
But yeah, that was obviously just very early on.
Yeah, because that was then and this is now. And certainly with the Blu-ray version, there is no excuse.
No, there isn't. I mean...
There is absolutely no excuse whatsoever.
I mean, it's stupid because, I mean... I don't know if you guys remember, but The Matrix was actually cut as well when it first came out over here.
I remember hearing that. I can't recall.
Yeah. There was when Morpheus and Agent Smith fight, Morpheus headbutts Smith, and then Smith headbutts him back three times. But that was actually cut from the film for some reason due to dangerous fighting techniques. What? It's a headbutt.
The film's also got a 15 rating. I don't think it really matters at that point.
Hmm. No.
Now, again, this is the second point which I remember as well. Mm. I remember because I am such a big fan of the BBFC, but that's for another time. I do know that in general, the BBFC will rate tougher for home release versus cinema release.
Yes.
The idea being that in a cinema... it's a more controlled environment. So if there's an age rating there, you've got people at the door to say that person doesn't look 15 or, you know, whatever. But of course, when it comes to home release, the argument from the BBFC was they always have to take into account that people won't pay attention to the age rating.
Yeah. Well, then there's no point in putting a higher age rating on it.
I know,
it's tough.
That's why it's absolutely pointless.
I've actually gone through a list of stuff which had stuff cut for the DVD releases, and it's really quite scary.
Can you give us some, please?
Agent Cody Banks.
What? what?
Cut dangerous fighting technique. A double ear clap has been removed from the general DVD release. However, it was reinserted or uncut in the uncut DVD. Hello? Okay. Okay, you ready for this next one? You're going to love this one.
What, Agent Cody Banks and Cut? That's a thing.
Lilo and Stitch.
Oh my God.
Really?
They cut from Lilo and Stitch?
Yeah, dangerous imitable technique. A scene in...
It wasn't the orgy scene, was it?
No. That was left in, funnily enough. A scene
scenes of illegal substance abuse.
No, it's a scene in which a child is hiding in a washing machine. The UK version makes it look like the child is hiding in a cupboard rather than a washing machine, because that could be dangerous.
That just makes me think it's going to cut from the cartoon to a badly drawn stick figure going, I'm going in the cupboard now because that's much safer than a washing machine.
I think what we should do...
And then cutting back to the Disney animation.
I think what we should do is take the budget of the BBFC and actually implement it into a real-life Darwin Awards.
Yes.
For anyone who imitates.
Exactly.
Yes.
Okay, so we've got one more for you.
Okay.
Because you're going to love this one. Shrek 2. dangerous fighting technique. The UK version has a headbutt given to Prince Charming by Cameron Diaz's character changed to a neck chop.
Exactly how is that any better? Exactly how is potentially fracturing the skull and collapsing the windpipe any better than the other? Because quite frankly, both could lead to brain damage.
I think it's arguable that the brain damage has already occurred with the sensor right now.
Oh my.
There are some mind-boggling ones. Also, what I remember is a little technique. Seeing as some filmmakers will take really badly to a censor saying, "What, you know, we've cut this," and they want to do it themselves, what they'll do is that they'll show the BBFC or an agent acting on behalf of the BBFC a cut of the film. That person will then report back and saying, well, you know, this truncheon to the back of the legs or, you know, something could be problematic if you're wanting such and such a rating. And then they'll say, oh, thank you, Mr. Censor, who isn't a censor. They'll go and edit it themselves in the way that Disney seem to have done with this spear tip in Avengers. They'll take it out themselves.
So it looks more natural.
Yeah, and then resubmit it. And then the BBFC can say, we haven't cut it. And Disney can say, it's not been cut by the censor in the UK. So, you know, we don't have to say anything about it. But, of course, that happens a lot. And, yeah, I can see how something like that has happened.
I think the spear tip thing, especially, it's just, one, we know, everyone knows it's... Is it Loki at that point?
Yeah.
Loki's weapon. And two, it's really bloody hard to replicate. I'm not sure if anyone's noticed, but there's definitely a lack of spears in people's living rooms, conservatories, bedrooms, hallways.
It's not just that, but in the end,
speak for yourself.
In the end, Coulson still dies anyway, so you can't exactly say, oh, that tip of the spear is too long.
Oh, do you know what? I need to talk... I think it's at this point that I need to bring up a slightly rude censorship instance that I have dealt with, thanks to the BBFC.
Go on.
I've, ages ago, got hold of copies of the new series of Laboo Girl, like, by the guy that did Rocksteady. Laboo Girl, obviously they did a series of that, I think even like the late 80s or something around then, but then they tried to do a reboot type thing like a fair few years back, like and around 2006 or 2007 or something. And the first DVD made sort of sense after the BBFC had got at it and cut out tons. And don't forget, because this is basically, for those who don't realise, a hentai type series, it means that sex is essentially part of the plot. So every time you cut out sex...
She is a sex ninja.
Yeah, she's a sex
ninja. Who uses sex magic, so it's fairly integral.
Yeah, so every time you cut anything to sex, the plot becomes harder to understand. So then came the second DVD in the new series. And they'd still given it an 18 rating, but the amount of sex that had been cut out from it, it might as well have been a 15. And in fact, it didn't actually make any sense at all at that point. It was just completely and utterly ununderstandable at all. How did we get from that to that? It did last longer than 15 minutes, but only just is my memory of the whole thing.
The BBFC's version of this sex ninja shows the nipple.
It's just... It didn't deserve the 18 rating after it had been cut. It was just like, seriously? Really? Because there's like almost no sex. There's nothing shown.
I will say, with those... I remember I bought the original... in a La Blue Girl on VHS imported from the US, and it's like, yeah, as soon as I heard that they were actually releasing it in the UK, it's like no.
It's just daft. It's
just, why bother? What, yeah. Just really, why bother?
At the end of the day, there's violence in the world, there's sex in the world, so you know, everybody knows about it, so why are you trying to cut it out?
And of course, thanks to censorship and the BBFC, we are the safest country in the Western world.
Are we? Oh, okay.
No, we're not.
I think, considering events of last week, unfortunately in Manchester, I would say we're not.
It's almost as if there are other factors at work.
Yeah. And certainly with the case of censoring things that are animated and involve impossible fantastical beings that don't exist, one assumes, in reality, doing things that actually are physically impossible because said things don't exist in reality, trying to censor those things, it's like, what are you trying to censor? You're censoring something that doesn't exist or something that doesn't exist, and there's just levels of disbelief that people would be dealing with anyway because it's animated.
Yeah.
Like Baudrillard. Burn them.
Yeah.
I'll just say, thank you, Internet. You've made all this kind of thing. You've made backward little jumped up organisations like the BBFC and the Daily Mail and, you know, those hand wringers absolutely pointless to anyone with even an ounce of technical know-how.
It's daft.
Do you know what?
Yeah, it's
crazy.
And when it comes to something like the Avengers Blu-ray being, well, first of all, incomplete because we don't have the commentary track, and second of all, censored because... And again, I'll just specify that when it comes to things like Spear Tips, I'm not sitting there going, oh, I hope this episode of Emmerdale is the one with the spear tip through the chest. Although, actually, I might.
Do you know what? Do you know what?
But it's just, I don't really want the spear tip to be there if it's not in the first place. The fact that I know it was.
Yeah.
And they've taken it out.
Well, do you know, it's ridiculous anyway, because the Lord of the Rings films, at least the last two films, they're 12s. There's spears in those. Loads of bloody spears. There's hundreds, thousands of spears.
I think there might have been a problem trying to take all them spears, though, because you haven't had a film left.
What are those people?
Hello, we've just defeated. Yes, we've defeated him. Where's the fight? Yeah, that's been cut. Don't worry about that.
Has anyone here seen the child-friendly trailer for 300?
No. No.
Is the one?
That, well, someone, it, obviously, as a comedy fan edit.
Okay, cool.
Things like, yes. It's very funny because it's just it's exactly, you know, the opposite of the film. But they've done things like, instead of giant swords, they've put a cartoon blancmange cake and things like that, and it's just, this cake is delicious. Brush your teeth and things. I'll dig it up and I'll
send it to the
Nerd Podcast. Twitter account. But yeah, it's worth watching. It's exactly the kind of thing which is it's just censorship.
Crazy.
Utter pointlessness, yeah. Where you're just taking out things which aren't real.
No, exactly. There's no point to it.
They aren't real. It's not going to happen. Just leave it alone.
Oh, going back to the commentary, obviously not being in the British stuff.
Yeah.
For Avengers, we had
ironically, sorry to interrupt there, but I'll just say this is the most idiotic part of it. I simply can't understand. Sure, it's an American company, an American film with American money. So why on earth would they be saying that it simply wasn't available in time for the UK release?
I mean, it's audio.
It's a nonsense.
It's audio. It's not like there would have been many encoding issues to get it onto the DVD and Blu-rays.
Exactly. It's idiotic. The whole concept of it not being there. We know we're not the primary market. We know our version is not the first version to come along, and everyone else is going to be improved upon that, which, you know, can happen with you know, British films. Where and subsequent releases, when releases are staggered across different parts of the world, it's just it's all done. So why not?
And also, I mean,
it makes reference too many times to the spear.
Oh yeah, the spear. The spear doesn't exist. No, I was just say, Mr. Mandor on Twitter tweeted at us earlier that the Matrix DVD, at least originally, certainly didn't have any director commentary from the Wachowski brothers.
No.
Is this still the case within the Ultimate Collection? Because I don't tend to listen to films with commentary on.
No, I think the Ultimate Collection has got commentary on it.
But originally, the DVD didn't have it.
No.
It's the fact that Disney have kind of turned around and said that they won't put it on a kind of future release of it.
Have they basically said that they're not going to? Not even
that's the
if
impression
they do
that I got anyway.
A special edition.
Basically, it is going to be just another way of making sure they get more money from us, because like with every release of Star Wars, it's going to be released again probably in 6 months' time with other, you know, box set, platinum edition. And guess what? The director's commentary's on there. Come and get more features.
Or as with Sin on the Wizards Harry Potter set, they'll probably do director's commentary or like extra features or extended cut of the first couple of films.
Yeah.
Just so that they can publish a future kind of box set that's more complete.
Yeah, I don't understand, actually, speaking of extras and stuff that supposedly has extras, why anyone's bothering with that new Harry Potter box set. Apart from the fact that a whole load of the extras it's like, is it triple, quadruple play anyway?
It's quadruple play because you've got the DVD, you've got the Blu-ray, and you've got the Ultraviolet, which is kind of a take where you want and kind of stream it from the internet. But I've heard that there's actually quite a few of the special features that are actually Blu-ray only.
Yeah. So
which makes sense for capacity.
For capacity, but at the same time, if somebody just buying it thinking, oh, you know, it's okay, there's the DVD versions, and they haven't got a Blu-ray player, but they're just buying it to get the extra.
Yeah, it's a 52-disc set, so one extra, like, disc, or, like, a couple of extra discs. 52, I believe.
That sounds a little high.
But bearing in mind that's obviously DVD as well as Blu-ray, and if you need a disc for the... I'm not entirely sure.
I mean, it's... So there are only two films that are extended, and this is not, like, necessarily that we're getting fudged over compared to any other countries. That's just kind of, like, why bother if it's only two of the films, and it's the first two films? Which actually, out of the whole bunch, would be probably the best, in my opinion. So they didn't really need much messing with. But I just feel like say in comparison to something like the Alien Quadrilogy, which when that was released on DVD, you got the theatre versions and the extended cuts for those.
That was quite a good collection. Yeah, I got that.
That was pretty good. And plus, I think there may have been commentary available as well. But I don't know, it's just, I mean, if it's not censorship and if it's not commentary, then it's the things not appearing over here at all to begin with. So, like, I've always been annoyed that when Cardcaptors, the anime, was shown over on TV over here, it never got a proper DVD release or even VHS release over here, whereas the US at least got a decent VHS release, despite the fact that obviously the series was censored over there, and because of that over here, like the whole relationship between, was it Sakura's brother and a best friend, was a bit dubious. Guy on guy situation. But yeah, that's things like that. Yeah, we can't have that. But then it's like, as you mentioned to me, Retroid, with like the Pip-Boy clock.
Yeah.
Collectible for Fallout 3. And that never came over here. And I was looking at pictures of it online, and I was just like, I'm so jealous right now.
I want that!
Yeah.
I could see the drool coming out of Emily's mouth. It wasn't pleasant.
Yeah, I feel like I've been denied an opportunity there to have a clock that fits in with my aesthetic.
I have to say, nothing gets people riled up like more than this in terms of kind of films and whatnot. And I can just imagine somebody somewhere like who owns a theatre, just basically like every movie he takes like one scene out just to kind of rile people up.
That's a true sadist. I wonder if anyone like that exists.
Can you just imagine that? So like going to see like you know, kind of anniversary edition of like Star Wars, and like one scene out of the entire film was just taken. It just didn't show. I reckon that would actually be quite funny. Just the outrage.
So it's bad enough then where we've got like the BBFC kind of like being heavy-handed, but then when studios preempt them, even though it's the stuff that would essentially have got passed anyway, it's just like, even if the spear tip was left in, I don't think there's any way on earth that the BBFC would have rated Avengers Assemble, as it's known over here, sadly, as a 15 rated film. It would have been 12.
Or 12A. Yeah.
I mean,
is 12A?
12A cinema only. Rating, as one assumes.
The 12A cinema rating was only brought in because the Americans had PG-13.
Yeah.
And also, it was brought in around the time the first Spider-Man film came out, because there's loads of parents worried about their kids trying to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but it's just, this is the
mess. Don't try and understand them, because the more you try and understand them, the more you're just going to get annoyed with it all.
Do you know what? They've been celebrating their 100th anniversary this past year. And,
100 years of terror.
Yeah, the BBFC. They've been doing special things to do with it. I'm not sure if you noticed, but the certification screens before films have been slightly different lately. When you go to see them in the cinema, because it's been their 100th anniversary. So, yeah.
I'm a big fan of the BBFC. I just wish they would accept the fact that they're limited by technology now.
Yeah, and accept the fact that they're reviewing things about 100 years old now. You know, with old age values and issues that have changed dramatically.
I mean, to give you an idea, the whole video nasty for Raw. I'll keep this very short. The whole video nasty for Raw, when VHS, you know, first came out in the early 80s, or, you know, sort of early to mid 80s, the BBFC had a situation where they had a total dominance on what we could watch.
Yeah.
And when it came to VHS players, you really had to go out of your way to get one which could play US tapes.
Yes.
Whereas now,
it's so easy.
It's so easy. You don't even have to import something physically.
No.
So you you can set up a Netflix account and have a US account on that.
Yeah.
So you completely bypass them.
Yeah. Piece of cake now.
Yeah. It's so much easier than it used to be, so the BBFC are anachronistic.
They're outdated.
Yeah.
And still, basically, we just shouldn't have studios preempting what they may or not do. They can afford for it to go back through again if they have to cut stuff. So, it's just insane. I think looking at the time, we may have run out for the time for this week, as per usual. So I think we better say our goodbyes.
Night.
So basically, if you, it's goodbye from me.
It's goodbye from me, Paul Blewett. You can follow me on Twitter, Paul Blewett.
Yeah.
And also have a website, paul-blewett.com, which is mostly a video editing kind of based portfolio for me.
And it's good night from me, Paul Wood, or Retroid on Eurogamer.net, or Super Retroid on Twitter.
And it's good night from me, Paul, aka OneArmed_Cookie on Twitter. And you can also find me at thegamejar.com. Thanks for listening.
Also, just so you can find me on Twitter at EK6891. And of course, you can find the podcast at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. You also find us on Twitter at NerdPodcast. We're on Facebook as Nerds Assemble Podcast. And we may be lurking somewhere in Google Plus. And links to. Links to things such as the loading Indiegogo page we will be including in the post to go with this episode. So check out there if you feel like you want to become part of the cause there. So good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
See you next week. Well, listen to you next week. Ha ha.
Ha ha.